number two on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We broadcast 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, soon to be going to 4 days a week on Rush FM in Hamilton, Raglan, and even soon to be Mount Maunganui here in New Zealand. And I've been told not to talk about myself, but I can't help it sometimes. There was a incident this morning whereby the Rush Limbaugh of New Zealand, Mr. Michael Laws, and I've got the recording here, I'll play it at some other show, talked about chemtrails and how crazy everybody who believes in chemtrails is, and how they're idiots and how they're conspiracists, throwing out all the ad hominem arguments under the sun. Got news for you, Michael. That's not an argument. And what was interesting is he said that I met these protesters on an ironically rainy Saturday down in Hamilton. And it occurred to me, I was that person on that rainy day down in Hamilton leading that protest. So it matters not the fact that I ain't called into a show. He's seen me, even if he doesn't know who I am. And I think that this is an important lesson for everybody to learn. Get the frack out there. Just do something. If you think that something's wrong, do something about it. It is guaranteed that there will be a ripple effect of some kind. Even so much as a mechanic that I was talking to, I just had my car fixed yesterday, and thank you so much, listeners, for donating, because I literally wouldn't have been able to have the money to fix my car if it wasn't for you. The mechanic who was dropping me off, and you might appreciate this, Neil, I asked him, you know, where would you rather be? You know, because he was complaining that he had to work and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. and he'd rather be fixing up his own car, or he'd rather be going to the beach or something of that nature. And then he turned it back on me and he said, well, what about you? Where would you rather be? What would you rather be doing? And I had to laugh and I said, you know what? I'm exactly where I want to be and I'm doing exactly what I want to do. And it only started as soon as I stopped doing what other people told me.
That's beautiful, mate. That is beautiful. That right there, what you just said, before you start doing what you want to do, you have to stop doing something first. You can't transition smoothly from one to the other. I've said in the past, and forgive people who follow my work and have heard this say this before, but to your audience and all the new people who don't know who the hell I am, it's like you're on a train going north, right? And you're on it for years and years and years, and you're on this train and you're hurtling along going down, and you think, hang on a second, I don't want to do this anymore, right? So the temptation is, you wait till it slows down at a junction and you wait for one going south to come, and then you try and jump from one to the other, right? You think, well, that would be good, because I can stay on a train, I can keep moving, but I can change the direction to where I want to go. But it doesn't work like that. The first thing you've got to do is get off the train. Completely get off it. Stand in the wilderness, the train's disappeared over the horizon, there's no new trains coming. None that you can see. And you stand there all alone with the bloody tumbleweed blowing around your legs and think, right, I've done it. I have done it. And I can't see what's coming. And I don't know what direction I'm going in, but I've stopped. I have stopped. And that's the first thing we have to do, is stop doing the old thing. Even though you can't quite figure out how the new thing will work and how you're going to fund it and how it's going to affect everything, you don't know. And guess what? The universe is like that. It only provides right on the crest of the wave, right? You can't plan for it. So a big portion of what I do with people is to get them thinking, pull the consciousness out from the future and bring it back into where you are now. Because what the system is trying to do, what the unreality signal tries to get you to do, is to forecast and cast your consciousness out into the future and spread it thin. Really thin. And so you don't have much of it where you actually are. It's all in the future in a dream of something, of retirement or success or material gain. And when you start to pull that back, you actually start to connect to the real world around you. And as I often say, when you do that, when you've chosen that path of courage and of self-determination, which, believe me, is hard work, it's easy to talk about and it's nice to watch other people do it, but when you do it yourself, it's always tricky, right? When you do that, everything starts to change because the universe can see you for the first time. It starts to take you seriously because it says, this guy here, this girl here, are now taking themselves seriously. So I will take them seriously and I will lend my connectivity and coherence and infinite power to what they're doing. And the purer we are in our mind, the more that can happen. The only thing that impedes the magic of that supportive process of growth and connectivity is our own faulty thinking, which is the unreality signal of the corporate media and the corporate education system and the consent to live as a member of society, which is a fake thing to do. There is no such thing.
Did you have some form of a well-to-do career path before starting this?
I worked in software in England. So we were a small company, about 30 people, but we contracted with large corporations. So yeah, I did that for a while, which was good training, really, in a sense, to see how does the corporate media portray gangster capitalism. How does that dynamic work, and why do so many excellent men and women continue to buy into it? I know the answer to that now because I did it for 15 years. If I hadn't have done, I wouldn't have quite been able to, as I said before, be so forthright about this, because I actually know what that looks like and know what that feels like to be up to your neck in it. So yeah, I have moved in those circles in times gone by.
Did you have an aha moment that made you stop it all?
I didn't know. I had my midlife crisis at 17, really, and just thought, hang on a second, is this it now? Is this like the freedom and the cool things and the music and the art? Is that the end of it now? And now you have to grow up and be, you know, a worker. Is that it? And I sort of looked around and the answer was, well, yes, that's right. That's what you're supposed to do now. And so literally from that age onwards, I just did everything in my power to make that not be the case for me. So even when I was consenting to work for an unreal thing with the idea that that was going to help me put bread on the table and pay the bills and drive a car or whatever, even when I was doing that, I knew what I was doing. I was conscious of what I was doing. And as I said before, the balance point comes where you start to then withdraw your psychological an energetic investment to that process. So I moved away from business and moved more away and more until eventually I'd created a situation where the other things I was doing was generating the necessary resources for me no longer to be part of that system. And there was no magic, there was no lottery win, there was no special treatment. Nobody ever gave me nothing. You know, I did it on my own. But I realized the sacredness of that journey, and I realized the sacredness of all those people who are still doing that, that it's kind of like anthropology in that you are gifting yourself the opportunity to see the machine from within the machine. You can't just pontificate about it and imagine what it's like when you have a nice, easy time and you have some rich family who, you know, there's like an endowment and you get $5,000 a month and you don't have to do anything for it. That's not helpful, that. You actually have to kind of shed some tears and drop some blood. And it's at that point that you can then have that feeling of solidarity, in a sense, with your fellow man. And you might be disappointed in them at times and frustrated with the stupid people. I was going to say something very unpleasant then. We get frustrated with people. There's no question about that. But more than that, I feel a kinship with my fellow humans and a fellowship with them and think, look, we don't have to do it like this, you know, we really don't have to do it. But the first thing you've got to do is stand still and stop and say no. And you have to do that with a tremendous degree of valiance, right? Because you're taught from being a kid forwards that the last thing you do is take a risk on your future. And that's precisely what you've got to do to live as a natural human being.
I remember on Saturday, I haven't filmed a dance party in a long time. I used to do it a while ago just to kind of earn a little bit of cash so I can keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And because my friend Daryl, he basically didn't have a choice and kind of got me in there and filmed all day. And this girl comes up to me and asks, how can I get into that? How can I start doing that? And I said, well, first of all, you've got to quit your job. Secondly, you've got to live on the bones of your ass for 6 years. Thirdly, you have to have a partner that you can mooch off for that particular period of time as well. Fourthly, you have to know the promoter personally. And fifthly, you have to know that he doesn't have a freaking choice.
That is funny and very true as well.
You know, and I don't think people get this, that there's no easy way.
No, and just because you're very buoyant and humorous and you've always got a smile on your face, it might mask the fact that actually it's really hard. And there are some nights where you lie awake thinking, how am I going to do that next month? You know, and the answer is, I don't know. And for the moment, it takes dynamic.
It's actually more like every single thing that I've wanted or needed, exactly when I need it,
suddenly
shows up. It's really weird.
Well, that's what I said before. The universe is always manifesting as the crest of the wave breaks, right? Whereas we like to think it would be nice if you could forecast that 3, 6, 9, 24 months into the future, but it doesn't. It gives you it as you need it. And that's the only trust that is ever useful in this world, is the trust in that process. All other trust is optional. You don't need to trust anything or anyone other than that, because it's not necessary. You can have an excellent, faithful, awesome, genuine relationship with anything and anyone. No trust required. But trusting in the process of the universe's ability to provide customized abundance is a big one. Because everything we've ever been taught is to not trust that and say, look, the universe is essentially a place of emptiness and lack, and you have to accumulate your own abundance as a secret store that you build up for yourself. And that is against natural principles of how the universe works. And so we have to unlearn this nonsense that we've been told and realize that that process is actually quite magical. It is metaphysically esoteric. It is something that competes for our belief system as to, well, hang on a second, it's not all just quite cause and effect in the way that I thought it was. This consciousness is more deeply rooted into this equation than we have been led to believe. And when that's your real life, when that's what happens when you open your eyes in the morning, and when that's what you do to pay the bills, then you're really putting your feet to the fire. You know, it's a real test, that. But what that girl asked you is very encouraging in a way, because some people take it upon themselves, like you and me and all the other people like us, to have a go and stop and do something different. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think that's starting to change for the better, though, because there are communities arising where it's a little bit easier to transition. And I know a number of people who live in this part of the world who don't use money and law and taxation and education and the media in the way that anybody else does. Those things are conducted in a completely different way. And I see different kinds of communities arising that are not just physically detaching from the grid, as you might say, but mentally detaching from its false education as well as to what the world is. And there's a new kind of transitional space set up where you could say, well, it might be difficult for you just to stop doing your job in central London and suddenly do nothing. That might be difficult because literally you won't be able to pay next month's rent or whatever. But what you could do is you could create a situation for yourself where you transition into that through travel and through moving with communities who that is their business, that's what they do. And you've got examples of that, like these eco-villages and conscious communities and transition towns and Burning Man type things. And they show a flavor of that. But let me tell you, quietly, privately, in the background, these communities are just happening all over the place. And they're getting the shit together to some extent. So before they start shouting,
we've got FCC regulations. We've got FCC regulations. I apologize to the affiliates for that language. But yeah, anyway, keep going.
I beg your pardon. As long as you bear in mind that people are thinking along those lines and are absolutely in number doing the same thing that we're talking about, you start to not see people as sleeping and ignorant and unconscious, but rather as in a sort of shell of self-protection, saying, look, I would do this, but I don't know how to do it. I literally wouldn't know what to do and how to reorganize my finances and resources to make that a reality. So until I do, until somebody can show me how that works, I'm going to keep going to the office. And so I detect that in large numbers, that if somebody wins $1 million, they're not going to go back to the office on Monday morning. And as long as that's the answer, then it shows you where people's heart is on this. And so they look into people who are doing things like you're doing to say, well, what did you do? You know, what drove you to do it? What gave you the guts to do it? Was it all out of necessity, or was the choice? And is it working out? And, you know, tell me your story on that. So perhaps, you know, that voice, particularly coming from a younger person like yourself, is very, very relevant right now.
Yeah. Have you ever been to drunken parties and you get really good advice in the midst of it?
Yeah.
I wanted to get into filmmaking before I started doing all of this. And I found these two young guys who were doing green screening and stuff like that for major film companies. And I asked them, just like this girl asked me, how do you get into that? And they said the Nike thing, just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah, and I just did. And that's very similar to what you were saying, is that nobody helped me. And I think it's once you realize that you don't need any help, that's when the help actually starts arriving. Isn't that interesting?
That's very true. I gave a talk in Portland about mysticism in December, Portland, Oregon, where I live. And one of the slides up on the screen, on this big screen, was the Nike swoosh, and it just said, just do it. So I totally am with that, and that is the mark of the mystic, that they have that principle. Don't think about it. Don't talk about it. Do it.
Well, incidentally, I'm not sure if you can make this out, but there is a burn mark on my arm that is in the shape of a Nike symbol. Isn't that interesting?
That is
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with my very special guest, Neil Kramer from neilkramer.com.
And gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know
Welcome
about
back.
The Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about depleted geraniums on Valentine's Day. It's the Vinnie Eastwood. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And my very special guest, the Englishman cackle in the background, is Neil Kramer from neilkramer.com. Welcome back. And we were talking over the break about FCC regulations and things of this nature. And when we have conversations with people who are supposed to be adults, and they get really offended and maybe walk out of the room or something if you use the F word or something of that nature, you go, I apologize, I didn't realize you weren't over 18. I think people need to grow the frack up. And these regulations, I've had to use word replacements therapy, so instead of the S words, I'll say Shiite Muslim. Instead of the F word, I'll say frack or fracking.
Yes.
For frack's sake.
Yes. Mm. And a funny one that I've encountered living in the States, because, as you know, in Britain and most of Europe and probably Australia and New Zealand, correct me if I'm wrong, they're quite secular nations. Religion isn't quite woven into the fabric of society in the slightly strange manner that it is in the States. And I think because the North America is quite a young republic, religion's still really part of it. It's like 70% of people have some sort of interaction with Christianity typically here. And so saying God and Jesus and so on in the wrong way still offends quite a lot of nice middle-class people here, which has been a complete surprise to me. You know, it's very easy to edit that out of one's dialogue and discourse. But you get used to, when you get used to the privilege, self-generated privilege of talking to conscious people, you let your language go very fast and dirty and loose and deep and wide and eloquent and whatever you choose to. You know, you let the artistry flow, you let the paints go wherever. And then when you speak to mainstream society who have chosen not to make consciousness part of the life for whatever reason, which is up to them, the language becomes, it collapses down from 200,000 words down to about 5,000. And within those 5,000 words, about 100 of them are forbidden, you know? So it's a very funny thing, very Orwellian in the sort of way that the dictionary shrinks and the use of vocabulary is less important the closer you move to the core of the mainstream.
I think this is what political correctness is really about. Not about stopping people from getting offended, but from stopping people from being able to say what they think and feel.
Yeah, it does, because it makes people nervous to say, I don't want to talk about abortion or the Second Amendment or gun, you know, the gun issue. I don't want to talk about race and ethnicity and migration and immigration because it's just too weird and people seem to get in a lot of trouble when they do that. So instead, we might whisper across the kitchen table to talk about those things, but we certainly are not prepared to do it in public very often. And when it is done in public, we have people like Piers Morgan conducting those conversations in a very inappropriate and offensive manner. So it's a shame that, and I kind of refuse to fall into that, which to some extent is why I've been talking about the Constitution and the Second Amendment and guns recently, which is a funny thing for a person like me to do, because people are far more used to hearing me talk about metaphysics and consciousness and the mind and how we can liberate ourselves from various bizarre groups. So to get into the nitty-gritty of political rumbles is a funny thing, but I sort of do it just as a refusal to give in to the idea of, as the FCC might say, look, you're not allowed to say any of these seven naughty words. The corporate media says, look, you're not allowed to talk about these seven naughty subjects. They are forbidden, verboten. They are heretical things to get into. And I just think, well, I'm sorry. But as even as Noam Chomsky said, who is a bit of a lefty himself, the good old lad, you know, if you do have any sort of intellectual capacity, and I always believe that that is something we decide for ourselves, not are born with, if you decide to make that part of your life, then you do have a little extra responsibility to observe life truly and to actually do something about it. So just having that capacity and the privilege of not constantly wondering where your bread and water is coming from, and you've got shoes on your feet and you've got $20 in your back pocket, if you have that privilege, then you have a certain obligation to do something with that intellect and actually apply it to some of the quandaries of the world and some of the shenanigans that our the old hierarchy get up to, trying to preserve their bizarre empire. We have a responsibility to do something about that and to speak truly about it. And if that means that you have to talk about forbidden subjects, you realize that it's going to upset people. And I've talked about the most bizarre things, like 4D negative entities feeding on consciousness and funneling it through, you know, all kinds of strange pyramids and all these way out things like that. And, you know, these mass genocides of human beings, you know, 10,000 years ago. And nobody worries about that. That's fine. But if you talk about the right to own a barrel that fires a piece of lead out of one end of it, people suddenly get the knickers in a twist and start spouting off like an old steam train, and the steam comes out of their ears and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I thought you were, you know. And it's been very educational, that, to see that happen. And it shows me that as long as you stick to the esoteric, everybody's happy. But when you get to the pragmatic matters of life, when you actually bring big philosophy into the big things of everyday real life, then that makes people feel uncomfortable, because it brings the quandary of change right to the front door. The wolves are at the door scratching at the bloody thing. Or like Jack Nicholson with his axe in The Shining, you know, it's not far away. The specter of that change, that moment, as you said earlier, where we have to say, no, stop. They actually have been keeping that at bay for many, many years. And so I remind them of that by insisting on applying philosophy into actually everyday life. It's a living philosophy, not just some dusty old weird thing that we do in a room somewhere. It's actually how we live.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the ability to respond to something, I believe you then have a responsibility to act.
Hmm. Well, it's hard to deny that, isn't it? If you, that responsibility, you might say, is from our own higher self or our own relationship with the divine, our own inner divinity, our own piece of that creative source. And if you've got that, if you're a real natural human being, you generate more problems than you solve if you disown it. If you choose not to make a difference in the world, you are contributing to wrongness, that is imbalance. You are contributing to the concrete manifestation of your own shadow. So if you ignore your inner shadows and your inner vulnerabilities, if you ignore them and try and disregard them altogether, you physically project that as real things in the outside world. That's how the dynamic works. And so not only is it morally, should we say, a good thing to do to actually make a difference, and not only does it make you feel a hell of a lot better, but it also actually directly contributes to solving some of the problems. Because as you said earlier, even if you just have a chat with someone at the mechanic's place when you get any car fixed, that little episode sends ripples out consciously into the world, and it changes people. And that guy goes home and says to his wife, you know what, I think I might start doing that thing that I was going to do years ago, and I might make some changes. And you were just the, you know, the final straw in a good way, the cherry on top that made him finally do that. And as we do become more conscious, even just as I often say, you know, in the grocery store or in the bath or driving along in your car, even in these very mundane situations, you actually physically change the environment by the way you think and the way you walk and the smile on your face in the face of adversity says a lot. And the confidence that you can exhibit, people think, that's good. I'd like to be able to do that too. Why has he got that? What is he doing that's giving him that confidence? And I think it's very natural. And all you've got to do is allow yourself to do it by being more true in all your interactions and all your deeds, not just in your head, but with your body.
Mm, and not let it go to your head and let the ego take over.
No, well, if you're true to yourself, that never goes very far. So you might see that a little bit now and again, but you realize the universe will trip you up. Every time you do that, it will tie your shoelaces together and you fall flat on your nose and think, that wasn't good, I'm not doing that again. So I don't think there's a tremendous problem with the ego as long as you are building your philosophy about life and your inquiry into existence, actually into your life, because you tend to take a very compassionate and humble view of it.
Does it mean, like, essentially, if you don't act with humility, you will eventually get humiliated?
I think so. I think that the quandaries start off, or the lessons start off, as a very faint pattern. And every time you ignore it, that pattern becomes harder and more well-defined, better defined, and so on and so forth, until there comes a point where it smacks you in the teeth, that pattern, and says, look, I've been telling you this for 10 years. You've ignored it and ignored it and ignored it. So now I'm going to come to you as something unpleasant. And so you cannot any longer ignore me. And so the job of the sovereign spirit, of the natural human philosopher, all of us, is to detect and act on those patterns, even when they're at their very subtle level, to think, yeah, I could be an egomaniac, I could be an arrogant son of a gun, but I'm not going to do that, because the payback for that brief feeling of recognition is not worth the dishonor involved in that, and it will catch up with me. So instead, let me try and speak as best I can, as truthfully as I can, not show off, not do anything for effect, but do it because I really care about it and I really mean it. And I am capable of smiling.
But what if I really mean to show off?
Show off.
Yeah.
If you want to stand on the table and take your pants off and throw them around your head, go for it. You know, that's okay. That's a different thing. If that's a true reflection of some joy in your heart in that moment, and it's a silliness that you want to express in a appropriate environment, you know, if there's all old age pensioners around you at the Conservative Ladies Club, you might decide that isn't the moment for that. Yeah. But if you're with your mates on the beach at 2 o'clock in the morning listening to the radio or whatever, you might think this is a good moment to do it. However, do it. There's nothing wrong with that. We're not talking about going around like little monks or nuns. That would be very dull, wouldn't it? What we're talking about is expressing ourselves truly out of our own heart and out of our own integrity, where everything you do is moving towards it being permanently authentic, always a true expression of yourself. Not an image you've seen on television, not something from a magazine cover, not informed from fear, not informed from jealousy, but informed from true human expression of, this is me, life is multifaceted. Sometimes it's very bizarre and surreal and silly and funny, and other times it's very hard and dark and requires a certain combative approach, and it's all of those things, and I am capable of meeting it at every level. So you need confidence in that, but it's not arrogance, because that, as I say, will trip you up pretty fast.
That's true, and I've been called arrogant by many people, and I try to just inform them, look, man, I'm not arrogant, all right? I believe that I don't really know a whole lot. I haven't been around too long. I could never claim to. And even when I could claim that I know a lot, it would just prove that I know nothing. And I came up with a word coupling, I think, when I first started university. You know what the word visceral means, you know, very real.
I do indeed, yes.
And you know what the word protean means?
Yes, I do.
A social shapeshifter. So I define myself as a visceral protean. So I mold myself differently into every different social situation that I get into, but I'm still very real. I'm still very much me.
Yeah.
I called that being a visceral protean. I don't know what your feelings are on that.
Yeah, it's you are defiantly exploring your individuality when really at 28 or whatever, what you should be doing now is drawing it back and being more polite and mild and, you know, controlling your behavior and turning your volume down, getting a sensible haircut, putting a shirt and tie on, stopping talking about all these funny things and being normal, right? And that's the agreement that you have chosen to dissolve. And you're saying, I'm not doing that. Not because I'm up myself, as it were, not because I think I'm special, but because I feel in my heart that the true expression of being Vinnie Eastwood is a worthwhile exploration. And I am going to do it, and I don't care what anyone thinks or what anyone says. And sometimes I might get a bit overly demonstrative about that, but that's not really the worst crime in the world, is it? What would be far worse is if you ignored it all and then at 55 caught yourself in the mirror at work in the office with your rubbish grey shirt and tie and suit on and thought, Vinny, what are you doing with your life, mate? This sucks. That would be a disavowal. But finding out what our polarities are, what is Vinny at his craziest, what is Vinny at his most contemplative, all of those are the right answer. And we should be able to, as I say, have a full palette of that, not just paint in red, but in green and blue and black and white, you know?
I've always found it very interesting when I'm at protests and people who have been working the same job for 20 or 30 years and never really gotten anywhere lean out of their car as they drove past and yell at me to go get a job. We'll be right back at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
We can be more than ever, people. More.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here with Neil Kramer. And what was I talking about yesterday with some? Yes. The format of the show. Some people get offended by it, and I apologize. I'm not trying to do that. I simply want to have conversations with the most intelligent, thought-provoking people in the world. A fresh conversation. Something that they can feel comfortable, have a laugh, and divulge some really important thoughts in a open, collaborative type conversation, as if we were in a cafe or a bar having a pint of some kind, simply meeting each other for the first time. And when you have these type of experiences, and I've had many, and I hope that those listening to the show have had these type of conversations. You meet somebody. You don't know who the hell they are, but before you know it, you've been talking for 3 hours. And that's what we try to do on this show every day, is meet somebody, and before you know it, you've spoken for 2 hours, as we already have. How have you enjoyed yourself, Neil?
I've enjoyed myself very much. I appreciate your own unique approach to this subject matter, plus the fact it doesn't escape me, you being a bit younger and a bit perkier than other hosts. You're going to draw a certain kind of audience to you who will find it more accessible and entertaining and digestible. And that's just brilliant. Because if you just talk to very, very scholarly people all the time, you're talking to a very small audience. So the fact that you can be 1 minute talking about philosophy and the next minute, at the dance party, throwing yourself around or whatever, is part of the beauty of this, part of the dynamic of this, that this material that you deal with and the material that we've discussed on the show today is about real life and real people, and it's embedded into the flesh of every single day. And what better way to illustrate that than to have two real people talking about it who can have a laugh and play the guitars and jump off the stage and sit quietly with a book, smoking a pipe, and do all those things and not be afraid to have those facets in the life where we recognize that sometimes it's okay to be ostentatious and flamboyant and a bit bonkers, and other times the good thing to do is to draw it in, focus, get in the zen state and be excellent. And it's a matter of polarity. We are multidimensional beings. That's what human beings are. We are very colourful creatures. And so you have to sometimes emphasise that in your delivery. So if somebody's thinking you're talking too much or doing it wrong, Vinny, I think you should probably just take that into account for yourself and then keep doing exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, you always got to listen to criticism. Even the people who insult you really, really much, they probably know something. They're probably onto something, but just...
That's a very healthy perspective, and I agree with you. Even people who occasionally insult me to my face or whatever, sometimes if I can be very cool and not let myself get too defensive or, overwhelm them with power, if I can just be cool and not be an idiot and sit back, I can learn something out of that and think, right... I can see the point you're making, and it's absolutely a valid point. The way you're doing it sucks and is really poor, but what you're meaning and where your heart is valid and legitimate, and thank you. And if you can be big enough to do that, you can always learn from something.
Mm. And that's even if that person is, as we were talking over the break, somebody who just won't listen to you anyway. You can still learn lessons off people who know very little.
You can sit back if nothing else. If somebody's going on a big diatribe and just trying to dismantle everything that you stand for and what you're doing and how you're doing it, if they attack that for 50 minutes or 5 hours or whatever, you can sit and listen to it and just nod and allow them to do that. And if nothing else, you can examine why it is that such a person would choose to do that, why it is that what you're doing is presenting such a problem to them. And as we mentioned during the break, the big quandary if you were falling to pieces and your life was a disaster zone and you were a bad person, let's say for a moment, then people could say, well, yeah, Vinny's just completely messed it up. He had a promising career and such, and he's thrown it all away and he's doing this funny stuff. But because you're not, because you've still got a smile on your face and you've brought your skills together to a certain focal point and you're actually generating something new and interesting and you're having deep thoughts with great people, it's not possible for them to disregard you. And so you present them with quite a serious puzzle, which is he's doing something different that is heretical in mainstream culture. And yet he seems to be progressing within himself and becoming a better person. That is a huge problem if you've been investing in the unreality construct for years and years and years and years. People like you and me and those like us, hundreds, thousands of them, thankfully, we present a very deep philosophical dilemma, which is maybe the mainstream is all wrong and it actually does not serve humankind and does not allow people to be happy and grow and strong and creative and multidimensional. It does not allow them to explore shadow in an appropriate manner. In fact, it restricts them. And if you suddenly realize that you've had it wrong for 40 years or 60 years, it's a tough one to swallow that. And so you throw that pill right in the face and say, I am that pill. I'm embodying it, baby. So tough, you know, that's hard to look at. Tough, but that's me. So get over it, right?
Well, you know, get over yourself. And that's, I think that was probably one of the most important lessons that I learned in my life is not to take myself too seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very deep observation that you're lucky to, well, not lucky. You have created a situation through your own wisdom and your own learning and your own downfalls where you've achieved a peak of knowing, which is if you take yourself seriously, you actually impede growth. If you don't take yourself seriously, there's nothing to protect or defend anymore. You don't have to stay on the ramparts in the castle, you know, throwing your boiling oil and your arrows at people. You don't have to protect it. There's nothing to protect. So if you don't take yourself seriously, your learning accelerates. And then what were mistakes or faults become just happy little accidents that were just part of your learning. And you've nothing to defend. You don't have to cling to anything. And so your movement and the depth of your penetration into the big issues of life amplifies, like, really in a happy way. And that's all about not taking yourself seriously. So even though we can speak very seriously about matters and we can choose to put our little philosopher's hats on and get our quills and inks out and be all scholarly, we can throw that shit, oops, sorry, we can throw that stuff in the fire now and again and say, right now, it is appropriate for us to be human beings and sit around the campfire with our guitars and sing songs and be warm and emotionally available and emotionally intelligent. That is as important as all the other things. And if we can't do all of it, we're sort of missing out, really. And as I say, if you have sat in the same chair in the same office for 30 or 40 years, this is all very disturbing talk because it stirs something in the heart, which creates a real schism, you know, a real problem, a real fracture in the foundation. And if anyone feels that, I would say that is fixable. All of that is fixable. You might have to take some things down to get to back to that foundation. It's always worth it because guess what? You will have to do it in the end. Maybe not this time around, but you will have to do it. So why not do it now? There's no time like the present, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Skywalker didn't proceed to deny that Darth Vader was his father for too long. He had to get over it, you know, because he searched his feelings and he knew it to be true. And same as the thing that we're talking about here, anybody who listens to it and may not agree with it, again, search your feelings. You know it to be true. You know that working for some mega death corporation with copious quantities of scumbaggery around you, putting off writing your little novella that you've had in your mind since you were a teenager, not making films like you always wanted to, not starting that YouTube channel, you know that you should have been doing that all along. It's not too late.
It's never too late. It's never too late. It doesn't matter what age you are. My grandfather's 90 this year, and he's starting all kinds of new, exciting thoughts in his mind. It's never, ever too late. So we have the capacity to do that. All you've got to do is stop waiting for outside recognition for it and stop waiting for anyone's permission. You generate that permission yourself, and only you yourself, and be prepared for everyone to think, what on earth are you doing? And to look at you askance and think that you're making a mistake. That's quite normal. That happens quite a lot. And it's funny in the end, although initially it might be a bit disturbing. It's actually quite funny. So you learn to generate your own recognition of your own standard of excellence. And you know, if you've done something excellent, great, pat yourself on the back and then get on with the next thing. Don't wait for anyone else to say it. Don't wait for anyone's permission. Do it yourself.
Yeah. It's better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission.
You bet.
Because if you're sitting around waiting for permission all the time, you've got to ask, you've got to get other people's approval before you start doing something that you already know to be true, already know to be right, and already approve of. It is a waste of time. Do what you think is right, and I can guarantee you, the universe will fall in line behind you. Neil Kramer has been my guest. Thank you very much for your time today, my son. It's been fantastic.
It's been a pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
NeilKramer.com. He has DVDs. He's got books. He's got downloads and all manner of nice philosophical, dark occulted mysticism things. Go to his website, NeilKramer.com. That's Kramer with a K, like Kramer versus Kramer. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.